love, everybody. Ringo here. Beautiful day in LA. Talk. So, it was good to be able to kind of get it out in a song.
The whole, you know, origin of where we're all coming from.
I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. I am one of your three co-hosts tonight, or two co-hosts tonight, Tom Hunyadi. Tonight, we are talking Red Rose Speedway box set. And before we get to that, I want to introduce to you my two co-hosts for tonight. First up, she is the author of Songs We Were Singing, the guided tours through the Beatles' lesser-known tracks, and she's also the author of the Michael Jackson FAQ book. She is the queen of all Beatles media, Kit O'Toole. Hello, Kit. How are you?
I am good, Ken. Ken. Hello. See, I listened to too many versions of Mary Hello Lamb, and I don't know anyone's name.
Understood.
We'll
understood.
That later. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, and good to have you here, Kit. Next up, he is the host of his syndicated Beatles weekly radio show called Every Little Thing, and believe me, he plays Every Little Thing. He is also the co-host of the podcast Things We Said Today, and I'm talking about the one and only Ken Michaels. Hello, Ken.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Kit. Hi, everybody. I thought you were going to talk with the rose in your mouth throughout the whole show.
Oh, well, if, you know.
Yeah, put the mic in, because, yeah, I don't think everybody really got a good look. There we go.
There we go. Okay.
There we go.
Like I said, we're going to talk about Red Rose Speedway Archive Edition. But first, we're going to get with Ken Michaels, and he's going to tell us all the goodies that have happened the last 2 weeks. Yowza, yowza, yowza. Take it away, Ken.
Yowza, yowza. Bring me back to... Is this a chic program? Okay, first of all, as we speak right now, January 21st, the Bruce McMouse Show is being shown in limited movie theaters around the world, as a matter of fact, in the US, the UK, Canada, and Australia. I was a bit surprised to learn that they were going to do this, but it's nice that they're giving this kind of exposure in on the big screen. And I don't know how you guys felt about that. I was kind of shocked that they would go to that length for this.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. Yeah, I was a little surprised as well. However, I'm noticing that, you know, didn't Rock Show get a little limited release? And you know, I'm noticing more and more things getting released. Like, I'm also a big classic Doctor Who fan. They're also releasing certain episodes in cinemas as well. So, all these little releases are pretty cool. And but we're gonna be here. We're gonna be talking about the Blu-ray that comes with the set. So hopefully people get to go out to the theater and check it out.
Yeah, it's actually running right now. Mm-hmm. And also, Paul has added a U.S. date for his Freshen Up tour this year, and that's June 29th at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. One of us, I believe, will be at that show.
Yes, that's fingers crossed. That is a venue that we work at, and hopefully I will be feeding the crew that day, so I look forward to that.
Well, you've got to wear something to impress Paul, like that rose, for example.
Exactly. I will have a rose in my ear all day long.
Also, at the same time, Ringo has added a date in the U.S. for his tour with the All-Stars. That's August 28th in Oakland, California. That's at the Paramount Theater. And tickets for both those shows for Paul and Ringo have already gone on sale. Now, you may have heard about this, but Paul has approved a reworking of his song Blackbird for an Animal Requiem concert, spearheaded by Rachel Fuller, who is the wife of The Who's Pete Townsend. And also, the concert is being done to celebrate the lives of deceased pets. Now, audience members can bring photographs or any memories they have of their beloved pets to this concert, which will take place at the St. James Church at Piccadilly in London, and that's on January 31st. There'll be a full choir and orchestral performance of the Animal Requiem, and a CD will be made available as part of a what they call a mourning pack that people can acquire when a pet passes away. Okay. Also, we were talking in our last show about Paul's brother Michael releasing, well, reissuing his 1974 album, The Gear, which many of us consider to be like a Lost Wings album, since Paul's on it, many members of Wings are on it. I had reported, based on an interview that I heard with Michael, that it would be coming out in February. Now I'm hearing, actually, this comes from Tom, because you posted this on Facebook, I think, that it's coming out in April in both clamshell CD and DVD as a set and on 180-gram vinyl. All right.
Yep. Nice.
So I'm sure we'll be covering that when that comes out. We haven't had any enough box sets coming out.
No.
Also, let's hear it for Yoko. She was seen on the streets of New York City on Saturday in a wheelchair as she marched in the Women's March.
Yes.
You got to hand it to her. In a wheelchair, she's frail, and she's still fighting for women's rights. We should all be applauding Yoko for that.
Absolutely. I was just so brilliant, just inspiring to see her. I mean, you know, that she would make that effort. And so absolutely, I applaud her.
Yeah. All right, Yoko. Last Friday saw the release of the John Lennon 75th birthday concert held at New York's Madison Square Garden shortly after what would have been John's 75th birthday. Legendary singers and artists performed there, like John Fogerty, Willie Nelson, Peter Frampton, Sheryl Crow. It's come out as a double CD, also a CD DVD, and also an LP, which you can now order, as a matter of fact, on Amazon. And with special thanks to Tom for this, I didn't know about this, but Ringo's 1978 album, Bad Boy, is coming out on 180-gram vinyl. It actually has come out on vinyl recently.
Right.
But this is a translucent blue and black swirl that it will have on it. It's being mastered by Joe Rigoso at Friday Music and Capitol Records. It has a striking gatefold cover and a 12x12 poster insert. It will be selling for $32.98 at FridayMusic.com. And the expected shipping date for that is this Wednesday. I know one person amongst us that's going to be buying it.
Yep, I think I can guess.
I have the one from a few years ago. I already pre-ordered it. What am I feeling?
No, you've got to get this one, blue and black, translucent.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That sounds cool.
Got to get every color.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Got to help those Ringo sales.
Yes. This is kind of odd, but kudos to Steve Marinucci. I wouldn't even know about this, but he posted this on Facebook. But as you know, Amazon has their own music charts. Mm-hmm. And Egypt Station is the number one album on their bluegrass charts.
What?
When you think bluegrass, you think Egypt Station.
Right.
No, really. I mean, I don't understand why it is, but it's there.
Now, maybe Saw You would sound better in bluegrass style. I don't know. You know, I mean, it might be a vast improvement. I'm not sure.
Hey, I like that song the way it is.
Maybe we can get Steve Martin's band to do a cover of that song for his bluegrass band.
Yeah, he would do that. He's a big fan.
Yes, right.
Also, the Ruddles are back on the road. They'll be doing 21 dates in the UK, all marked in for May and June of this year. That's only the UK, unfortunately. Ringo is on the front cover of the December-January issue of Drumheads magazine. And some birthdays to celebrate. Richard Lester, who I think it was yesterday. Oh, no, on Saturday. Richard Lester turned 87. God bless him. And Mark Lapidus turned 71. And yesterday, Paul's guitarist, Rusty Anderson, turned 60. That's all the news I have for now, unless you guys have anything else.
I know the only thing that we can put in the rumor mill, if you will, maybe there's speculation going on about the next series of color vinyl that Paul McCartney has been doing the last couple years. And titles that I've been seeing is Wings Over America, which will be, you know, re-released since it wasn't part of his reissue campaign a few years back. Also, Paul is Live is another one, and the Amoeba Show. So, and there's one more, it's blank in my head, you know, but anyways, but it looks like he's going to continue with, you know, releasing four titles at a time on this vinyl series. So they're all going to be black vinyl and color vinyl as well. So I think those are going to be, in June, I want to say.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting because Paul's Live hasn't been reissued in any way.
No,
and you said the Lipa concert?
Yeah, the Amoeba.
Oh, the Amoeba. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yes, yeah, the Amoeba show. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Okay.
Yeah. So, but the anyways, yeah. Okay. Well.
Oh, and like Michelle. Sorry, Thomas. I forgot to mention that Ken Womack was not able to be with us tonight. Yeah. He is sick, and so we want to send get well wishes. But he will be back next episode. So, wanted to mention that.
Get well, Ken.
Yeah.
Yes.
Feel good.
Feel good. Yep. Absolutely. Like I mentioned earlier, we're going to be talking about this behemoth of a set right here, the Red Rose Speedway archive set, beautiful set. But first, I want to get Ken and Kit's reaction to the album. I'll talk about my thoughts of the album too. So, Kittle 2, why don't we start with you? What are your feelings about Red Rose Speedway? Where is it in Mecca's canon, if you will? And just your overall thoughts.
Well, you know, this has always been a little more of an uneven album for me. It's definitely not one of my top picks. However, it's been really interesting revisiting it, you know, with this remaster, because there are certain songs, you know, like When the Night, that in a way I kind of, you know, I just hadn't heard it, listened to it in a while. And, you know, I think I initially wrote that off, and now listening to it, I like it a lot more. Big Barn Bed, I've always loved. And, you know, My Love, of course, is a classic. So there are, and Get on the Right Thing, I've always liked that as well. So there are some real, there are some gems, you know, on this album. But it's, you know, there are also some, and we'll probably get into this in a little bit, that, you know, I've always been a little iffier on. But I think it's important to say that it's just so fascinating, and we can talk about this later, but to listen to Wildlife and Red Rose Speedway back-to-back, because it's just astounding how different, you know, the difference in sound and how, you know, this was a bit more polished so it's fascinating. You know, you really, the band is now really starting to grow and come together and no pun intended. So it's an interesting listen on that, you know, on that end. So,
right.
But I wouldn't rate it as one of my favorites, but there are some nice moments.
Got you. That's funny you say polished, because if you feel, you know, this box set, it's very smooth and polished and glossy looking, whereas the Wildlife box set was more rough and more coarse. And I kind of had a feeling that maybe that was done on purpose, because, you know, maybe those Wildlife sessions were maybe a little rough and coarse. And here these sessions were, even though according to Glenn Johns, it wasn't, you know, professional, but, you know, I think the production was still a little bit more polished than Wildlife, if you will. But Ken Michaels, your initial thoughts on Red Rose Speedway?
I like to rate albums from 0 to 10, and in Paul's entire canon, there are about 9 or 10 albums that I rate a 10. I think that highly of so many of his albums. This one is pretty darn close to it. As someone who has always been a lover of melody, and, you know, as I've said many times in my other shows, the Beatles are the masters of melody. John, Paul, and George are three of the greatest melodic songwriters of all time. This particular album has some of his greatest melodies and great vocals all throughout, powerful vocals. And I think just about every single song here is perfect. Maybe Single Pigeon is not as strong as the other ones, But as someone who thinks that Little Lamb Dragonfly is one of the top 10 songs of his entire catalog, I absolutely just completely love Little Lamb Dragonfly. I think that it's really a masterpiece, not only melodically, but how the whole song is structured with different melodies, different sections that are strung together. Nobody is better at stringing together sections of songs, piecing them all together, and having them flow as seamlessly as Paul McCartney is. And the melody of Little Lamb Dragonfly is absolutely gorgeous. The arrangement was fantastic. I just think it's a stunning piece of work, that one song alone. And then if you take a look at the rest of the album, Get On The Right Thing is really a very great, catchy song. It's one of my favorites in his solo career right there. Big Barn Bed is also catchy. I do think that had there been a second single from this album, which really was prevented because Live and Let Die had to come out. But, you know, Big Barn Bed could have made a strong second single right there. It's so catchy. Only One More Kiss I love. I love the whole medley on side two. That's absolutely genius, what he did there. I mean, it reminds you, as many people have said, of the Abbey Road medley, taking songs that maybe weren't completely finished, short songs, that you mix them all together, they flow well. And then, most impressive to me, is at the very end of the song, how they bring all four songs together all at once, simultaneously. It's absolutely brilliant what he did there. And I love, this is where we're going to get into an argument, Loop. Because I like the experimental side of Paul. I wish he would do more of that. I sometimes wonder, and maybe we can get some response from our viewers right now. You know, Alan Parsons was involved with this album, and Dark Side of the Moon was being recorded around the same time. Was that in any way an influence? I don't really know for sure which came first, but I do wonder about that sometimes. When the Night is a favorite of mine too. It's very different in the time signature, the way the song is structured, the call and answer thing, you know, which the Beatles did so much of. It's a great song, and vocally, especially towards the end of When the Night, I guess you might call it the coda, Paul's vocals are just on fire. All throughout the whole album, his vocals were just amazing. So in terms of melody, in terms of arrangements, how the band was coming together, I love now really focusing on Denny Sidewell's drumming. I love his drumming on certain songs like Get On The Right Thing, the fills that he did, Big Barn Bed, listening to Henry McCullough's guitar playing, which was more bluesy compared to the other Wings lead guitarists, like on Big Barn Bed, the solo in there. Mm-hmm. And of course his masterful solo in My Love. But song for song, there really isn't a clunker to me on Red Rose Speedway, the version that came out. Like I said, Single Pigeon was not the strongest one. But if that's the weakest song of the bunch, you know, it's a damn good album to me.
Not bad. Yeah, for me this is a tale of two sides. One brilliant first side. I think there's no arguing whatsoever that the first side is some of McCartney's best work. Big Barn Bed to Little Lamb Dragonfly. And you're right. I mean, the harmonies, the production on that, the singing, the instrumentation on that song is top 10 McCartney. It's what you call that pure McCartney, if you will. That was, if you want to use that as a term for McCartney's career. And then that's one of the songs that deserves to be in that, pure McCartney, category. However, now, side two or B, whatever you want to say, that for me, that's a little bit on the weaker side. Not that I hate these songs, mind you, but I just feel like, Single Pigeon, I felt that this is like a song that he wrote in 5 minutes. It's just a quick piano song that, and When the Night, again, I don't hate it, but I mean, I don't necessarily like it. I mean, I felt like that's again, something that's, he loves that kind of music. I mean, that stuff and with Single Pigeon, that stuff just comes natural to him, I think. And it was just something that, could have been done in 5 minutes as well, too, unfortunately. The medley.
Some of, Some of Paul's songs, I get that feeling about throughout his, his solo career, that he just wrote them off real quickly.
Yeah,
right. And not that they're bad.
That could also be to his credit that he can crank them out like that.
So. Exactly, right. Well, and plus that you had, you know, what, probably 30 some odd songs that you could have put on this album, because we all know it was originally, you know, supposed to be a double LP. And if you really look at it, it probably could have been a triple LP if you put all the you know, the singles in there as well. But, you know, that medley... Okay, I find the first two segments very repetitive, not very enjoyable. I feel that the Hands of Love into Lazy Dynamite doesn't really work to me, but I love Power Cut. You know, I think that could have been a song on its own. I didn't think that it needed help to be part of a medley. But all in all, this is, you know, I think probably right in the middle for me of his canon. Not bad, but not part of his better works. But you know, but it's very enjoyable. I loved looking back on this album as well too. I mean, I was never a big fan of Single Pigeon and Win the Night, but I been enjoying them, you know, not to say that I love those songs, but I do enjoy them. And the quality of these archives audio on this disc is very enjoyable. Now I'll have an issue with a couple songs later on the bonus disc, but this does sound good. And I think it's either equal or better to that 93 McCartney collection that came out back then. So,
well, and I've got to say, and Ken, I think you touched on this one in your comments. I think Denny Seawell really is to me, this remastered album really puts him in a great light. I mean, his drumming, I knew he was a great drummer, but I mean, it really comes through on the remastered. I think, you know, you hear it, it's a fuller tone. You really appreciate the, you know, the just the little things he does, the fills. You know, he is such a skilled drummer, and I hope that this remastered box set gives him the credit that he richly deserves.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's the thing about these box sets coming out, is that sometimes you hear things that you may never have heard before or concentrated on.
Right.
You know, I've heard Wildlife and Red Rose Speedway since they came out, and now I'm really zeroing in on Denny Seawell's drumming and Henry McCullough's guitar playing. Like, you know, in Wildlife, the drumming on Love is Strange is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, and Some People Never Know and Mumbo, and I'm concentrating on that. Very nice, Don Malley. When the Night is Underrated. Very nice. But you listen to all these fills, and it's just spot on what was needed. You know, it makes me appreciate the first lineup of Wings even more.
Exactly. And we're getting a lot of wonderful comments here, including a number of Single Pigeon defenders. We got a number of them here.
Okay, fair enough. I'm not going to say that it's terrible or I hate it. I'm just saying it's just not for me. I mean, it's just, you know, like I said, it's just has that rushed feel to it, and that's okay. You know, that doesn't mean I'm going to skip it when it comes on, because I won't. I'll just, you know, maybe not pay as much attention as I will as the other songs. But anyways, getting back to this is the box. I would imagine that most of you out there have either got this or the vinyl or the two disc set. And Kit, I mean, you were playing around with it over the weekend. Ken, you said you ordered it. And did you get your
I got
box?
It.
Okay.
As
cool.
A matter of fact, let me just apologize real quickly, because last week I wanted to say something on the show that Amazon had Red Rose Speedway down to $83. I forgot to mention it, but by the next day
it was already done.
That's it. But and they did that with Wildlife too on Amazon. Mm-hmm. For a brief time it was in the $80 category.
Yep.
So
correct.
You know.
Correct. Like Flowers in the Dirt, Pipes of Peace and Tug of War, it's got that you know, the pull out book, which is, you know, done really well. The pages are really nice. There's you know, memorabilia in there. There's stuff you can pull out. There's lyric sheets that you can pull out. And funny enough, you guys know about the Hold Me Tight lyric sheet, right?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that everybody get one, and yeah, because they're the Hold Me Tight from
the Beatles.
Yeah, so yeah. I find that interesting. Whether that was a mistake or you know they did it on purpose, it's quite funny. But Kit, what were your impressions on the box? How did you feel about it?
Well, I thought the packaging of this was incredible. I mean, I thought it was just first class, you know, and yes, you could actually get the CDs out of those pouches easier. I know we've talked about this before with, that was great. No, but I loved, I mean, the book certainly gives an in-depth look at the making of the album, talking, and I, what I love about that book and as you know, looking at all the artifacts, it just really puts you in that time, you know, mm-hmm. that he recorded that album in terms of where he was, obviously, in his career musically, but also family. You know, you see a lot of pictures of Linda and I mean, and some with the kids, not as much as Wildlife, I think, but you see some of that, it's a very 70s period, you know, I mean, there, and it's great. I mean, the free spirited feeling, that you get, and so you get that, you of course get the Bruce McMouse drawings. I mean, I don't know what else in terms of the packaging they could have included. It was just, I think, first class.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they definitely covered, you know, almost all the bases, just like the Ram box set did, you know, including Thrillington and you get the mono and you get some good, you know, good bonus tracks on that too. So they really did a great job with covering all of that. Ken Michaels, your thoughts on the box.
The packaging is A1 superb. It's one of the best ones he's put out. I do love the Red Rose Speedway book because, like you were saying, Kit, it's not just about the album. It's everything leading up to the album. It's recording Live and Let Die. It's the drug bust in Sweden.
Yes.
There's a couple of pages devoted to that. I'm surprised.
Two drug busts, actually.
Yep.
Yeah. Were they both covered? I thought it was just
No, the one that he got busted for growing on his farm too, where he said that he got these seeds from a fan.
Yeah,
so okay. that's in the book as well.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. There's also I'm a real sucker for handwritten lyrics, and I don't know how they do it. I'm not a technical person. The way that they can pull out these sheets of paper and it looks like he just wrote them. You know, it's all done digitally, but it's so brilliant. And just the fact that he held on to handwritten lyrics and he saved them and it could be used for this purpose. I love the fact that he had some of the concert set lists in there.
Yep.
There are some things that you read about that didn't happen. Like there were plans to do some concerts in December of 1972 in the UK that never happened. There's a set list of songs that they were proposing. Junk was one of the songs they were thinking about doing live, things like that. There's so much that's packed into this book. And of course, there's all the photos that you've never seen before. There's outtakes of the front cover for Red Rose Speedway. So much stuff. The artist that did the drawings in there, Eduardo Paluzzi.
Right.
A lot of his work is in there. It's everything you could ever want in that book. And then on top of everything else, as far as Bruce McMouse is concerned, there's a pad in there which has the script of the actual film of what the mice are saying. So in case you're watching that film and you can't hear everything and make out what the words are, it's right in there. And there's even a booklet, Wings Over Morocco.
Right.
And that's Paul and the band when they vacation in Morocco at the hotel known as Mamounia.
Mamounia.
That's where the song came from. So there are photos from their vacation there, which according to the book, Paul was getting ideas for the James Paul McCartney TV special there. Yep. Some photos right there. You know, there's so much packed in, and that's not even including the audio and the video that we're going to talk about. So.
Right. This is one of my favorites right here. I don't know if you guys can see that, but they're all on the barrels.
Oh, yeah. Yes. That is a great one. There are just so many amazing pictures and beautifully printed. I mean, it's as you said, Ken, I mean, this is just, you know, A+. I mean, they just went all out for this, and it really shows.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So, like I said earlier, this, you know, I'm sure we all knew that this was going to be originally a double LP, but that plan, those plans were nixed. So, what we get here now is on the first bonus disc, we get that reconstructed double LP. Ken Michaels, I don't know how you are with bootlegs. I don't remember maybe hearing you one time you saying that you weren't really big into bootlegs, but were any of these tracks, I mean, some of these tracks we ended up hearing on B-sides, then again on, you know, on Denny Lane's
Japanese Tears.
Yeah. Right. So talk about some of these songs that were left off the album, and what were your, how did you feel this reconstructed double LP flew? I mean, our flow. I mean, were you a fan of how it was presented?
Oh, definitely. Before I get to that, just to answer briefly your comment about bootlegs, The early part of my Beatle fandom, I was very anti-bootleg.
Right.
That gradually changed. I can't say that I own every bootleg, but I do own a lot. Mm. And the double album here, I love the way that it's presented. It's almost, I hate to say this because it's different for me because I know all the other material that didn't make the double album because it's all been bootlegged already. So much of this stuff has been on Hot Hits and Cold Cuts, the bootleg, and there've been several bootleg versions of that with different mixes of songs. And so many of these songs were A-sides and B-sides to singles that we knew already. So in my head, I could hear this album already. Just by the track listing. But I do like the way that they flowed. And I'm very grateful for a number of reasons. First of all, Tragedy is one of my favorite unreleased McCartney songs. I love the whole arrangement of it. However, I will point out that this particular recording of Tragedy doesn't have Paul's vocals pushed up enough like it did on the first version I ever owned of Cold Cuts. It's kind of, you know, pushed back. Okay. More in the background. So Paul's vocals and the harmonies on Tragedy are so wonderful. And I love the whole arrangement. There's a sitar that's used in Tragedy. I'm so glad that it made the double album here. But this particular mix, I'm not as crazy about. And also Night Out.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with Night Out on Cold Cuts, that song had verses to it. This version is just the chorus repeated over and over again.
Right.
And I've been told, and I'm not sure if this is totally true, that at this stage, maybe Paul hadn't written the lyrics to the verses for Night Out. But I love all the singles and the B-sides, and I love the fact that a song like Country Dreamer is on here, and I Lie Around is one of my favorites as far as B-sides. I love the fact that The Mess is on there as a B-side. Mama's Little Girl. Did come out commercially on the Put It There CD single. I love the fact that I Would Only Smile is on there. I love the fact that there's some Denny Lane represented on this box set. You know, Best Friend was also a part of the Cold Cuts bootleg. So all these songs I knew already, and I love the fact that it's all presented here as a double album. I don't know if I necessarily will agree with what a lot of people are saying now, that it works better as a double album. I do like the fact that once you add a lot of these rockers in there, it has more edge to it.
Yes.
And Little Lamb Dragonfly, whereas I feel it's a near perfect album, I mean Red Rose Speedway, it could have used a rocker in there that really had an edge.
You
Although Get on the Right
album?
Thing, somewhere, anywhere on the album. You know, like, for example, you know, The Mess is a great rock song to me. You know, Best Friend I like a lot. So it could have used songs like those or Night Out, you know, if it was finished, I guess. But, you know, I like it as a double album. But I think that the way it came out originally was, as I said, near perfect. But I like the fact that they're presenting this as the double album that could have been. I'm not sure if this was the same sequence of songs that they had originally planned, because they do have a few pages in the book where they show you side one is this, side two is that. It's different from what's here.
Right.
It's different from what's on this CD. Mm-hmm. And I also would like to pose a question to everybody, if they even know the answer to this. I think I do know the answer. But McCartney 2 was also supposed to be a double album.
I was going to mention that as well.
And but when McCartney 2 was remastered, all the bonus tracks from McCartney 2 made it onto a second disc. I have a feeling you probably couldn't have fit everything onto one CD, which is probably why it wasn't done that way with something like Secret Friend, which was so long as a track. Right. But, you know, it's just interesting that Red Rose Speedway gets this treatment. McCartney 2 didn't.
Right. Yeah, I was kind of hoping that after, you know, hearing about this reconstructed Red Rose Speedway, that maybe sometime in the future, maybe an anniversary or whatever, we can get the reconstructed McCartney 2 on vinyl. I think, you know, everybody that I've been reading seems to really enjoy this reconstructed double LP, and I'm no different. I love the fact that Little Lamb Dragonfly closes this this set. I think it fits nicely as a closer. I like the fact that Seaside Woman could have been potentially Linda's first solo vocal on an album, and I think this is not that I'm not the biggest reggae fan, but I think this might be the best or my favorite reggae song that they did as a team. Night Out, you know, I want to hear that, those verses. I'm kind of intrigued now to listen. Maybe I'll try to find it on YouTube and see if it's there, because I think it's kind of a weak opener, but I kind of, you know, get the feel. I mean, Night Out, you know, it's a nice little rocker and maybe getting people excited about the album. Country Dreamer, I think, is a great addition. Best Friend, I had never heard before, because like you, Ken, I mean, I still kind of not the biggest fan of bootlegs, but that's one of the tracks that that I never heard before. And the same with Tragedy. I think I did hear Tragedy because a friend that might be listening right now sent me a bootleg of four or five different cold cut versions. So if you're listening, thank you very much for that. I'm a big fan of this set. And Kid O'Toole, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought actually the double album aspect was one of the most fascinating aspects of the set for me, because, you know, it was just fascinating to hear, you know, what he originally intended, or as much as can possibly be, you know, ascertained. It really lends a whole different perspective to that album for me. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, it was just fascinating to hear it reminded me now. Nobody, I hope no one thinks this is a blasphemous comment, but it reminded me a bit of the White Album, the double album, and that stylistically it was kind of all over the place as originally conceived. And I'm not saying it's equal to the White Album, but I'm just saying it's that same spirit of, you know, as you said, it goes from reggae to straightforward rock to pop. I mean, it you know, country. I mean, it goes everywhere, which I really like. I think that, you know, you really get a sense of how he was, I almost said spreading his wings, that's a terrible pun, so you know what I mean. He was really, you know, just sort of, you know, I think finally kind of finding himself in this band, and he was more, I think, willing to, you know, experiment a bit sound-wise. And Tom, I have to disagree. I think Night Out was a great opener. I I'm looking at my notes that I made here, and I even wrote, like, this is like rock show. Why didn't this go from the album? I mean, yeah, it's, I just thought that was, but I agree. I think Little Lamb Dragonfly was a great way to close it out. And I think Tragedy and Little Lamb Dragonfly kind of, you know, smoothly, you know, transitioned from one to the other. I thought that was really nice. Really interesting, too. And I'm sorry, I know one of you mentioned this earlier, that, you know, Denny Lane is starting to emerge, you know, a little bit more after Wildlife is, you know, a bit more of a force. Still not as much, but, you know, as on subsequent albums, which we'll be talking about in the future. But on this one, I mean, you know, particularly the double album, you really see that. Like, I like I Would Only Smile. I kind of forgot about that song. And you know, I really think that's a, you know, a nice, it fit in well with the group. I think fit in well with what would have been the double album. I like, it was catchy. It had kind of a little bit of a Birds aspect to it, a little bit of, you know, almost a Mercy. I mean, just really, you know, well written, well played, you know, so I think it's interesting, you know, that in the single album, you don't get that Denny Lane influence quite as much as you do in the double. The Mess, I've always loved. Why that didn't make the final cut, I will never understand. I've always been a favorite of mine, and live, it's even better. I mean, I think the live version, you know, I just think is, you know, they just, it's just a great rocker, you know, and they just sound so in sync, and I just always loved it. And I, if I ever got to meet Paul, that's one of the things I would ask him, why the heck did you leave off the Mess?
Well, you know, the Beatles and so many artists, one of the joys in following their careers is buying their singles and hearing 9 LP B-sides. And that's a real treat. And so we've got so many B-sides from Paul through the years that weren't on albums, and they'll make it onto these remastered box sets. But it was fun to collect them as they were happening. So it's thrilling. There's nothing like having an unreleased song on the B-side of the single. I want to just make a quick mention, Tom Brennan, thank you for your comment there. The Mess, by the way, if you own the single of My Love and The Mess was the B-side, there was an introduction that Paul gave, which was cut off from this all altogether, which I always loved playing on the radio.
You're absolutely right. You know, having all of these extra cuts and then just, you know, turning it into a single album. Yeah, the next three singles were B-sides from this proposed double album. You got The Mess, I Lie Around, and Country Dreamer was B-side for Hell on Wheels. So, you had this wealth of material that needed to get out. And do we know the reason why it didn't come out as a double LP?
The reason I've always heard is that the record company didn't want it to be.
Yeah.
Maybe it was too big of a risk. I mean, following Wildlife, which although it hit number 10 in America, was not a big seller. It was too much of a chance to take. Mm-hmm. Although, look at All Things Must Pass.
Well, when you have a magical producer like Phil Spector, I mean, it's hard to deny, you know, his power in producing an album, and plus the songs are great. So how can you deny that that as a double album, let alone a triple album? But you know, one thing I fascinating. Yeah, go ahead, Ken.
I just wanted to comment. One of the things that I'm always defending Wings as a real group effort, to the point where if you notice in the very beginning of the band, when they perform live, everybody got a song. I mean, Henry McCullough had a song called Henry's Blues. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about Linda with Seaside Woman. Denny not only had I Would Only Smile, but he had another song called Say You Don't Mind, which was a top 20 hit, I believe, in the UK for Colin Blundstone from the Zombies, who sang it. And they used to do these songs live. I kind of wish that, as much as I appreciate everything on this box set, there would have been something to represent Henry with Henry's Blues. And that other song from Denny was really a good song, Say You Don't Mind. So while I'm very appreciative of having I Would Only Smile here and Seaside Woman, would have been nice to have Henry included too. Gotcha. Especially on the live CD for the super deluxe box set, which I hope we'll have time for.
One question I have for you too, you know, starting with Ram, there was this, you know, writing partnership between Paul and Linda that carried over to Red Rose Speedway, and pretty much 90% of these songs are credited to Paul and Linda McCartney. Is there any doubt in your guys' minds that this was, you know, just Paul, or do you think Linda really had a big hand in with these songs, Ken?
I think she had some hand in it. I know Paul always brings up Live and Let Die, that Linda wrote the reggae part of it.
Right.
But there's always the speculation that at the time, the money that had to be paid to the Beatles for their songwriting was kind of was held up. And so if they were Paul and Linda McCartney compositions, Linda wouldn't be affected. So some money would go Paul's way because it was a co-write. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people believe that. But I think that she was inspirational in the songs. I'm sure that she gave Paul some ideas, but most of the songs were Paul's compositions.
Right.
Yeah, actually, I just have a comment on here. And for those of you who are listening to this, I'll read it. It's from our friend Rob. Hello, Rob. He's a faithful viewer of the show.
Yes.
And he says, does anybody see Paul's Happy Family and Animal Life, Countryside, Music, Country Dreamer, I Lie Around, etc.? This is kind of, you know, the sound and music that is uniquely Paul McCartney. And yeah, that is definitely a theme on this album. And that's one way, which is why I wanted to show this, is that it, you know, I think in a way, Linda, you could argue Linda did have an influence in,
right.
in, mm-hmm. in that right. sense. You know, you really, and certainly on Wildlife too. I mean,
right. yeah.
really got that. We have,
right. And if we have time, we'll talk about that, you know, DVD on Wildlife where you see those, what, first five songs. It's mm-hmm. that home video of them, you know, those two singing for the kids.
Yeah.
So, and certainly Country Dreamer, I Lie Around, they could have fit on Wildlife.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No doubt about it.
Okay, well, let's move on to CD 3. Now, this is the second bonus audio CD. This has singles, you know, rough mixes, stuff that hasn't been released before. Kid O'Toole, do you see anything on here that you you enjoyed on CD 3? Any standouts for you?
I really 1882. That was very interesting. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a maybe a pleasant surprise on this disc. I wasn't as crazy about the demo, although I found it interesting in terms of, you know, you're hearing him start to form the song. He clearly didn't have a lot of the lyrics set yet, although you could really see how he, you know, kind of his writing process, that a lot of times he'll, you know, scat through a song and you can tell like the sound he wants. And so then he later goes back and, you know, works on wording that will approximate the kind of rhythm and so forth that he wants. It still makes sense, of course. But you know, that was fascinating. But I think I you know, really think that was a strong vocal from Paul, particularly, I made a note here on the studio version. You know, he was in great voice throughout this record, by the way. I mean, really, he was top of his game. And on this one in particular, when he uses the raspiness in his voice, you know, to stress certain lines like, you know, man sees him coming, says, boy, you won't be running no more, and just screams it. Great, great stuff. I mean, just, you know, really communicates the drama in the song through his voice. So that was a fascinating one. I also liked the group only take of Live and Let Die, take 10. That was very interesting to hear, you know, without the orchestra, without the backing vocals, just Paul singing it, you know, hearing it sort of stripped down, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. That was really interesting. And in fact, that is one small criticism I have of the set, that I wish they had more of that kind of thing, a little bit more of outtakes. You know, the rough mixes are interesting, but I could have used some more outtakes of different songs and different versions. And I don't know why they didn't put those, more of those on. Jazz Street, I think I've heard that before, and I'm trying to remember. Maybe it was on a Cold Cuts collection. I'm not sure, but I swear I've heard Jazz Street before. But I kind of like not all of his instrumentals, but some of them, and this is one of them that I enjoy. It's just him being a little more, you know, experimental, and it's a good jam. I mean, it's you know, there's nothing jazzy about it, and why he calls it Jazz Street, it's not jazz, but it's a great, you know, great piano, funky bass, you know, so there's some nice extras on there that, you know, are again just another example of how he was, you know, just experimenting with all different kinds of music and sound and lyrics, you know, mm-hmm. telling stories. And so, so yeah, there were some really, you know, other than wish there'd been more outtakes, there were some really interesting, you know, things on that bonus disc.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned 1882. For me, that's quickly becoming one of my favorite McCartney tracks. Matter of fact, I put it on my Two Legs or Facebook page today. I've been listening to it nonstop. I do love the live version just as much as the studio version. And you're right about the home recording. It's, you know, it's about half the length, but it is kind of cool just to see that piano demo and where he's going with the song. I really enjoy that. Jazz Street's okay. Don't mind that. Thank You, Darling, I thought was really good. That's another track that I never heard before, so I thought that was good. The early mixes to Get on the Right Thing and Little Land Dragonfly, I thought were pretty good too, because they I think those were the early mixes from the Ram sessions. So it was you know, kind of cool to hear those early cuts. I don't think Paul had all the lyrics to a Little Land Dragonfly for that take, so that was fun to listen to. Yeah, as well. The one issue I had with it, and it's again, it's this the singles, just like Give Ireland Back to the Irish on Wildlife. I was comparing to these tracks back to back to the McCartney collection from the early 80s, and I just think the volume of the vocals are just not as high as they were on the McCartney collection. I don't know if this was done on purpose or what, but I just feel there's a big tone, you know, the difference, whether the pitch or the volume of his vocals. To me, I mean, I don't know if you guys noticed it or not, but it just doesn't feel as loud as I've heard in past archive sets. Ken?
I'll have to A/B that. You know, that's really interesting. Yeah. I never thought about that, about Paul's vocals on the new remaster here for these bonus tracks and you know, for the songs that were singles. But I will agree with the two of you. 1882 is a killer song. And the fact that you've got three different versions on and on there, the piano demo, the studio recording, and the live version, which is killer.
Yeah.
The thing that's frustrating to me about it is there's nothing in the book about it.
Yeah.
There's no explanation about this song, what it means. Is it the story of a real person? You know, it's got a folk feel to it and a blues.
Yes.
As well, mixed together. And it's an interesting story about this guy that steals bread and he's going to jail. And what is this? I would have liked to have known, you know, if this was a true story or not. So I don't know what the backstory is, or if Paul just made up this story about 1882.
Let's add it to the questions we need to ask Paul when we get him on the show.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, exactly. What the heck is 1882 about?
Early mixes I find really fascinating, because with all these early mixes, there are things that are left out that were developed later, or things that were taken away. I love Get on the Right Thing because, well, there's a little bit more guitar playing. There's a long guitar note at the very beginning of Get on the Right Thing. It ends with just vocals and just harmonies of the vocals, a cool ending for that song. Which actually the release version was kind of like that, but it fades very much at the end with just a little bit of that. But there was so much more of it in this early mix. I love Little Lamb Dragonfly because Paul only has a few lines that he's written lyrically. But what you notice is that everything else was developed for that song.
Yeah, the music was sounds spot on from what it was finished, you know, on the finished
arrangement.
Yeah.
So all he really had to do was come up with the lyrics for that. And I do remember Denny Sywell telling me that that song and Get on the Right Thing were leftovers from Ram. But the only touching up that had to be done on Little Lamb Dragonfly, by the time that they were going to release it for Red Rose Speedway, they needed more work on the harmonies. And Denny Sywell did some of the arranging there on the harmony work for that song. But Little Lamb Dragonfly is very interesting to listen to in that regard. Big Barn Bed is interesting. There's maybe a little bit too much Linda vocal in there in the harmonies. So that tells you that Paul knew the right balance for the finished song. There's some different lead vocals on the Big Barn Bed, the rough mix. So I like that. I like Jazz Street a lot as an instrumental. It is jazzy, just like the title. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Lunchbox Odd Socks, has that piano thing going on there. Thank You, Darling might be one of the few songs that I would consider B-side material. It kind of reminds me a lot of Young Love, a song from the 50s, which Paul worked on with Mary Hopkin on Postcard. You know, Young Love, it's got the same chord progressions, which were typical 50s chord progressions there. So much of this. And Live and Let Die, group only. That version is killer. It just makes you realize, even without the orchestration, what a great song it is. And it does have such bite and such edge this way as the group only version. And that was a completely different take too. Right. It wasn't the released one without the orchestration. So yeah, there's a lot of things here that I love on the bonus disc. In some ways, I kind of treasure that more than the double album.
Mm. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Speaking of the double album, you know, you can buy that separately on vinyl. And you're either going to get it on vinyl or you're going to get it in the box set. I don't think you're going to get that separately on CD. So that's the only way you're going to get the reconstructed double album. Moving to the DVD bonus disc, which I'm kind of, you know, baffled with because of the two DVDs. It could have all been on one, but, you know, whatever. Anyways, Kid O'Toole, your favorite segment of the bonus audio was the videos, right? You had fun with watching the videos the other day, and you know,
you know, I just can't get enough of Mary Had a Little Lamb. I'll tell you, I mean, watching five different versions, I mean, oh my God. Well, I mean, okay, for completist reasons, I get it. And actually, I did think the animated one, the one that the, you know, with the little girl, right, and the, that was kind of cute. Like, I mean, mm-hmm, I could see that even as a, you know, like in a children's show. I mean, it was, you know, it was very cute. And you know, I mean, did we need all of them? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it was, again, for completion. And you know, we were talking about before we went on the air that we were really disappointed with the quality, the video quality, yeah, of some clips, like the Live and Let Die performance from 1973 in Liverpool. Sounded great. I mean, you, yeah, know, I just wish you couldn't, you, like, couldn't see half of it. I mean, it was, you know, with the glaring lights and the faded print, and you know, it was interesting though how they used the flashing lights in exactly the same way that he does, right, in the concert today. That hasn't differed at all. I mean, that was very, mm-hmm, interesting. And you know, I thought that it was very short, but that interview that they have, the Newcastle interview, it's very short, but you can tell, again, it's a nice snapshot of where he was at that point. You know, he was clearly trying to establish, you know, Wings, his identity outside the Beatles, and you know, and so when he was, that was interesting at the end when the interviewer asked him, you know, so how do you feel? You know, are you okay with, you know, being on stage after being off for a while? And, you know, clearly shouldn't seem to remember the tour, the wildlife small tour he did. And he just said, "I'm fine, thank you." like that, and I thought, oh, you know, so he was in a defensive place at times. So that was an interesting thing. Of course, we have the James Paul McCartney special, which you know, it's a bit uneven. I would say I like the pub sequence. I thought that was a lot of fun to see him with his relatives singing in the pub. I mean, that was one of my favorite sequences. Another performance of them, you know, doing Live and Let Die when it was kind of a sneak preview of the movie, which was interesting. You know, I thought it was interesting how we had the different people, like he didn't sing that Beatles medley. I mean, he sang, of course, Michelle and you know, Blackbird, but he had other people singing the, right, the Beatles, mm-hmm, stuff. And again, I think it just shows like he's trying to separate himself, you know, from that, from his previous life in a way. I mean, he does play a couple, but so, I mean, it's an interesting, you know, it's an interesting document of where he was at that particular time, but you know, it was great to be able to see it, you, right, know, entirety, and these other things. I just wish that they had been able to do more with the remastering of some of those clips. That, right, was kind of disappointing. Yeah, I don't know, right, why they didn't do more.
Right. Well, I can tell you, if you can see behind me, I am a very big, you know, movie fanatic, and I am also a silent, you know, black and white film advocate as well. And a lot of special features on these films, they will show you film, you know, side by side comparison on these restorations, and they do talk about how expensive these restorations are. So, I mean, you can talk, you know, depending if it's a feature film or not, you can talk about getting into the millions to prepare, you know, to restorate these films or shorts, if you will, because you're really going frame by frame. You got to clean, you know, each frame up, and it does take time and it takes money, and you know how impatient we can can be as fans. We want this stuff now, and, you know, and but yeah, I agree. It would have been nice to have these, the quality of these videos presented better, but you know, unfortunately, you know, we didn't get it. So they probably just didn't want to put the money into it, which is fine. But yeah, it's a little disappointing. But Ken Michaels?
Well, as far as those videos are concerned, it does say in the book that all four of them were shot at the BBC. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if, like you said, they wanted to put the money into restoring it. But what kind of shocks me, and I could be wrong here, but I would think that, you know, if I was Paul McCartney, I would want every single thing I've ever recorded, audio or video wise, to be preserved. Right. And I would think he would have that all in his own archives. I don't know if the BBC might own these videos. I really don't know. I don't know the legalities. I'm just throwing it out there. But mm-hmm. when you're presenting all four of these, and I have no problem with there being four. I have no problem that there are 10 of them. It's a part of history. And anything that the man does, anything that all any of the four Beatles does, is a part of history and should be preserved. So I don't mind seeing four in a row of the same video, but I want them in the best quality possible. One of the videos, there's an upcut at the very beginning in the first chord of the song. It just jumps right in.
Yeah, that's right. That?
You know, and some of them are cute to watch. The one where they're all in a circus tent and they all have red noses and, you know, Linda's on a horse and this is supposed to be about lambs.
Right. You
know, why is she on a horse? I don't get it.
Groovy.
But but I like the fact that all four of them are on there. I don't have a problem with it. I just have a problem with the quality. And like you said, that performance of Live and Let Die, to me, I love the audio, but it's abysmal. I mean, there are bootlegs that are so superior to this. You couldn't come up with something better to Live and Let Die than that. As far as James Paul McCartney, I have to admit, it's the first time in a long time that I've watched this. Mm-hmm. And it really dragged for me. And I'm really disappointed that it did. I'm glad that it's out there because it is a part of history. But it is kind of interesting, the whole Beatle aspect of it all, because, you know, for all those years, he was doing whatever he could not to perform Beatles songs live. And yet in this special, in the acoustic opening, he is doing Blackbird. He is doing Michelle. Right. And there's some confusion, and I hope I can clarify this, about why certain songs were left out. There was a UK broadcast, there was a US broadcast. The US broadcast had Bluebird.
Yes.
In the very beginning. It's not in this. Mm-hmm. Was it in the UK broadcast? It was left out. The British one had all four of them, including there's four live performances at the end, and High is one of them. Yeah. It wasn't included in here. Correct. So you can't say this is a copy of the US one because it doesn't have Bluebird. Right. And it's not a copy of the UK one because it doesn't have High. They left out those two songs, and I don't know why.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's that Japanese edit that you can find on YouTube that will have Bluebird and High in there.
No. I didn't know that. Yeah. But, you know, there are segments in there that I do like. I love the live performance at the end. Yes. That's a big highlight for me. I didn't really need to hear people on the street singing Beatles songs. And yet, for someone who is at least at that time avoiding the Beatles, whether it's him performing it or people on the street, he's making that part of his product here.
Right.
It's addressing Beatles songs. So I'm kind of surprised that at that time he was doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole bit about Uncle Albert being played, and you got, you know, Paul and Linda in the office and all that, and the phone ringing, and it's cute. It kind of disappoints me that it's not the full recording of Uncle Albert Elmer Halsey. Right. But I do love the acoustic beginning there. I wish Bluebird was in there. And he also does Yesterday at the end.
That's right.
You know, it's a part of history. It's a document of the time, and it's important for us to have that. So I'm glad that it was included in this box set. You know, it did drag a bit for me, and I'm really stunned that I'm even saying that, because I thought I'd be looking forward to it so much. But and the pub scene was fine, especially when you realize his father's there. He's got Auntie Jin there. I think I saw Michael, his brother, in there too. So it's cool, and they're all doing pub songs, which was a big part of Paul's life. So I think that's you know, that's an important aspect of his life to bring out in this special. So it may have gone a little bit too long,
right.
That segment, but, you know, I'm still glad that it was released.
Yeah. Yeah. I do find it enjoyable for the most part. I do like the piano bit that he does that includes his Little Woman Love and, you know, the Sea Moon's in there. And I enjoy that part. And, but yeah, unfortunately, the video quality is lacking, and at least we have it. Now the part that, you know, just is really, you know, frustrated me, you know, when Flowers in the Dirt box set came out, they were saying, well, we're going to give you all these extra audio bonus features as a download available only, because, you know, we were only going to stick with four discs on these archive sets. But here, you know, on here, we've got, you know, three discs of CDs, and we got two DVDs, and we got a Blu-ray. So I'm not understanding the logic to, you know, to some of this, but, you know, to have, you know, a DVD with just the Bruce McMouse Show is kind of, you know, baffling to me, even yeah. though it does have the, you know, the 5.1 and the Dolby Digital and the, you know, the 16-bit 148, you know, and it's, you know, that could have been all condensed on the one DVD. It didn't need to be separated. You know, you could have brought the price down a little bit that way. But, being a Blu-ray fan, I am happy that they included a Blu-ray. But then again, with that Blu-ray, you could have added all of those DVD features onto the Blu-ray. There would have been plenty of room on the Blu-ray to include it, all of those features. So that was a little frustrating. So, but the Bruce McMouse Show, I mean, the thing that, you know, all three of us could have gone to see tonight if we wanted to, if it wasn't so cold outside. You know, it's in the 50s over here right now in Arizona, so I'm kind of bundled up right now. So, but you guys got this. Yeah. You guys got to see this finally. I don't know who here knew about it. I mean, I heard that it, you know, secretly heard that this was like the holy grail of McCartney unreleased material. So Ken Michaels, you know, did you know about this Bruce McMouse special, and how did you like it? Did you enjoy
it? A long time ago, I heard about it. There was a book called The Beatles A to Z.
Okay.
Mentioned it.
Okay.
And I never saw it, but I always heard about it, and I was always curious about it. But it's a very interesting film. I think one of the – why are you chuckling there?
I just like how you put it. It's very interesting. That was so diplomatic. I love that.
I give Paul a lot of credit for coming up with this idea, mixing animation with a live concert. But it wasn't really executed properly. Right. The thing is, once you watch this – there's maybe 5 minutes, 6 minutes of animation in the whole thing,
right.
You know, and there isn't that much of a storyline as far as the mice are concerned. So I think that, you know, he had a good idea. It just wasn't, you know, carried out well.
Right.
You know, I think most people, there are so many of us want as much live footage of McCartney and Wings, any McCartney concert as possible. Paul has gotten it into his head at times that it's not worth it to just give you a straight concert. It's too boring. You got to, you know, add some other stuff to it. And that's why we've had a few really poor concert DVDs like Paul is Live, which was so awful. And, you know, there's Rock Show, which was amazingly good. Really loved it. But, you know, you got straight concerts like the one in Red Square, Glastonbury. Those are all great concerts. They're pure concerts. But somehow Paul has it in his head that his fans don't want that. So, but the idea of mixing this with animation is a cool idea. But then give us more animation. Carry it out. It really didn't go as far as he could take it with this. So it's a cute idea. And, you know, there's just not much of a storyline mixing the mice with the band.
Right.
You know, but the footage of the band live is tremendous. The sound is great. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there was any audio sweetening that was done. That probably was. And I did notice that some of the songs that were part of the performance from Bruce McMouse was the same songs that are on the CD for the Super Deluxe
version.
I recognize Mary Had a Little Lamb as being the same one. So, and it's funny to watch this. It does say in the Red River Speedway book that the performances were taken from five different concerts.
Right.
Well, when you're watching one song and there's wardrobe changes within the one song, it kind of gives it away right there. You know, they have different outfits. Linda's hair is different in different, you know, throughout the concert. You know, you can tell that they were taken from different concerts. But the concert footage is great. And I actually like, even though it's taking away from the footage of the band on stage, I like when a song like Wildlife was done the way it was, mixing that with actual wildlife footage of animals and also dealing with pollution, cars on the street, congestion, driving home, that whole theme, mixing that with the band. That was pretty cool as a video by itself. It didn't really bother me all that much. I thought that was very well done. It stands by itself as a video that way.
Right.
But the mice were more incidental than anything else in this film.
Right.
I also found it interesting that there were two moments when you saw the graphics for the Bruce McMouse show here, which made me think that was this planned as a TV special?
TV special, yeah.
Was it?
Okay, I think so, sure, because you got that as a setup as a commercial break or a return from a commercial, you know. So I mean, it had to have been set up for a TV show.
And as Tom Brennan pointed out, and it's true, Big Barn Bed is the studio
version. I was just gonna say
Inside
that
Inside Woman is the studio version.
So and you're right about the whole animation thing. You know, Paul, I think everybody here should know that Paul is a big fan of animation. You know, he wanted this to work out, but he had also said in the book that it, you know, if you're going to compete with Disney, you got to make it look like Disney. Well, this didn't look like Disney, so you know, it went on the shelf. You know,
but when Paul did stuff like Rupert and the Frog Song, that was brilliant.
Yeah,
for animated shorts.
Right.
It really works.
Yeah.
And I was kind of hoping, and this is just wishful thinking here, I have no inside information about this, but since he put Bruce McMouse in here, is there any chance at all that we might get Rupert the Bear, the full
film?
Or as far advanced as they went?
Right.
With later remastered box sets?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we get to Give My Regards to Broad Street box set, I mean, that was played before the movie, you know. So maybe we would get the reconstructed, you know, the full length version of that. But you know, getting back to the concert, I found one thing really interesting, and I'm glad that they changed was the production of My Love, when, you know, Paul is singing, you know, My Love, and then you hear Linda repeat the My Love. You know, I found that pretty interesting, and didn't necessarily care for it, but I thought it was okay. But I think you hear that throughout the whole live tours, right up until the time they finally record it, and then they smartly, you know, got rid of that aspect of the song. Kit, your opinions of the McMouse show?
Well, I mean, you know, I had actually not heard of this before this box set came out. I was talking to a friend of mine, Ken, you'll know him, Steve Shorten, and when he told me that this, you know, this box set was coming out, and he said, at last we'll have Bruce McMouse. And I said, great, what's that? And, you know, and so he explained it to me, and I don't know how this flew under the radar for me. So it was interesting to see. Yeah. I mean, it was an interesting idea. And as you both pointed out, I mean, Paul is a huge animation fan. So in a way, it's not that big a surprise. But yeah, the execution just didn't work. You know, the animated sequences just felt forced in there. You know, there was no, as you said, Ken, there was really no storyline. Some of the dialogue, particularly the teenage son, wow, that was cringeworthy. I mean, like an older guy trying to sound hip or something. Oh, you know, not good. But, you know, but yeah, the concert was great. And Ken, I'm glad you mentioned the wildlife segment. That was, I thought that, I agree. That could have been a video on its own. Right. I really like the visuals there. And also Seaside Woman. You know, that segment was interesting. I mean, showing the different, you know, I'm assuming that if that's Jamaica, I think. You know, that was a cool segment because it was like a video. So if they had done kind of a video album, almost like John and Yoko did with Imagine, that could have been very interesting. Different. I think that could have been executed better.
Right. Yeah. It was almost like what Zeppelin did with the song Remains the Same. I think they had like a few skits, you know, within the songs during those live performances as well. But go ahead, Kit.
Yeah, and I agree. And yes, our friend Steve Sanderson quotes a line, "The Wings is here." it's a shame that it just wasn't executed well. And I can absolutely see why this project was shelved. I mean, it was just, and the animation was just okay. I mean, when they said they weren't trying to be Disney, well done. it isn't. But the concert stuff is great. If they had left it as either like an entire concert film or done a series of videos, you know, like they did with Wildlife, that would have been great. But I'm glad we have it because, as you said, Tom, this has been, I have since learned, like the holy grail among, you know, many McCartney collectors. And so now we've got it. Now we've seen it. We know the story behind it. So for those purposes, it's good to have. But, you know, it just didn't really work for me on the animation level.
Right. Gotcha.
You know what else I find really interesting about the whole live aspect of the band is that certain songs change in their arrangements. And like a song like Soily or something like that went through changes from the very beginning all through up till, you know, Wings Over America. And you experience a lot of that with this, or like that difference, like you said, Tom, with My Love. And it's also interesting to note that some of these songs that Paul did live, especially the Red Rose Speedway material, he did before the album came out. So all these people got to hear My Love. And never wouldn't know the song, you know, or Big Barn Bed, for that matter. So, And you also get to realize how certain songs, especially something like Wildlife, it's not only, you know, an enjoyable song for me as a song, but it's a great live song. And Paul's vocals and the way the band sounds, these songs really work well live that they chose to do. And you get to realize how they were gelling as a band there. And the band, they certainly look like they're having fun. There are moments there. It might have been Live and Let Die, Denny and Henny dancing. Or making these moves right next to each other on stage. So you get a feel for what it was like in the early years. I sure wish that we would have one complete concert uninterrupted from this band, just like we have Rock Show, and have one and one from the last lineup of Wings. Something like that would be really nice. I think the fans really want that.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope for that in the future. I mean, it is, 2018? This series started in 2010, so it's not the quickest, campaign release that has been out there. I'm sure, I know for a fact a lot of musicians have since re-released their product a few times since the beginning of this archive release from McCartney and his camp. But any final thoughts, you guys, on the Red Rose Speedway sets?
Overall, I think a stellar job was done. You know, the packaging, as far, you know, it's all the books that were included, the book on Red Rose Speedway, Wings Over Morocco, the script for the Bruce McNaus Show, all that stuff, handwritten lyrics. I love seeing lyrics that change over time. And if you look at the original handwritten lyrics of certain songs, there's a different line in The Mess. I can't remember it off the top of my head. But when you see these things, you know, I find all that stuff fascinating. And as far as the packaging, you couldn't have done a better job there. The only thing that I would complain about are the quality of these videos. Right. The video for Live and Let Die, the performance of that, which was terrible. Yeah. And the interview with Paul and Linda was way too short. It ends abruptly.
Right.
Doesn't have that much substance to it. I felt they could have, you know, picked something better.
Right.
A better interview, maybe. Right. It's not a perfect box set, but it's pretty close to it.
It's pretty close. I'm thinking with this and wildlife, obviously the bonus material on wildlife is not as plentiful as it is here, but you get 116 minutes on disc two, you get 112 minutes or an hour and 12 minutes on disc three. So you're finally getting your money's worth, I feel, with the bonus material audio wise. Video wise, yes, that's my only complaint on this set. However, you're not getting any Mary Had a Little Lamb videos on the McCartney Years DVD set that came out way back. But Kittle Tool, I know that's your favorite part.
Thank God we have them all now.
your final thoughts on the set, Kit?
No, seriously, it really was. Again, the packaging was just exquisite. I mean, just first class, great fun to read through. You really learn a lot about the time period where Paul was in his career, in his personal life, the making of the album. You really get a fuller picture of that. I have the same quibbles you guys do about the videos, that I wish they'd been in a little bit better quality. I feel like now for completists, particularly, as I said, we now have James Paul McCartney, we now have Bruce McMouse, we now have these things, which are really, really good to have, because despite their flaws, they're part of that story, of his career at that particular time. Wish there had been some more outtakes, but that's a small quibble with the bonus audio. Overall, I just think it particularly the double album reconfiguration, I think it presents the album in a whole new way, and I've actually grown to appreciate it a bit more after listening to this box set.
Cool. Very cool. Well, that's going to do it for our look at Red Rose Speedway. Why don't we go around the horn, if you will, and talk about whatever we have coming up. Kid O'Toole, you want to lead the way?
Sure. Well, I have continuing my Deep Beatles series about the White Album. So go over to somethingelsereviews.com for that. Those of you who are watching this live tonight at 11:30 Eastern Time, I have a new edition of Bottomless Soul on Bumps Radio England. The links are on my Facebook page. You can check out where to listen. It's going to be a salute to James Brown, and I am co-hosting it with one of the biggest James Brown fans I know, my dad. And we had a blast recording this. So I highly recommend go over and shake your money makers with us. It's going to be a great, great show.
All right, cool. Ken Michaels, what do you got coming up?
Well, right before we did this recording here, I did a session with the Things We Said Today co-hosts, and you'll never guess what we're talking about.
I can't imagine.
It's the Red Rose Speedway box. But you get different perspectives from my two other co-hosts, with Darren DeVivo and Alan Cozen. That'll be posted probably Wednesday or Thursday this week. I do have my other show, Every Little Thing. By the way, my syndicated radio show, Every Little Thing, which is now on 36 stations. Wow. I just did something on my website. There's a page devoted to it. And I just updated everything so that if anybody wants to hear that show on any of the radio stations that carry it, it's all done by day of the week now. So it's very easy to follow. So you can see the radio stations, the broadcast times, all the stations stream. And if anyone has never heard Every Little Thing, it's a mixture of Beatles, solo, anything the Beatles ever touched. Side projects, cover versions, family members, tribute songs, you name it. It's all thrown together in a one-hour show, and every show has a unique theme to it. So if you want to explore that other show that I've been doing on the radio since 1982,
wow,
somehow I'm still sane, just go to kenmichaelsradio.com and look up my page for Every Little Thing. There's also my Beatles trivia and games page, which has 9 prizes you could pick from every single week for Beatles trivia, including Kit's book, Songs You Were Singing. I just finished up a special contest to win Ken Womack's new book on George Martin called Sound Pictures. But you can win anything from Egypt Station on CD to, Songs You Were Singing.
There you go.
There was a double DVD of the Beatles on Ed Sullivan with all their performances there that you can win. The two CD version of Imagine. Those are all prizes you can win every single week on my website. One out of nine prizes. The trivia question, by the way, this week is a Ringo question that has to do with the Beatles group years. It's not always solo. Most of the time, I mix the two. I try to do that. But that's at KenMichaelsRadio.com. Okay?
Fascinating. Cool. Very good. You know, my podcast, Two Legs, David and I, we've been really busy lately with work, unfortunately, or fortunately, because I can afford to buy all these little wonderful things that are coming out. But we have our look at the song Get Enough. I know a lot of people have had enough of Get Enough, but we're going to look at it, and we're going to talk about it, and we're also going to talk about our four or five of our favorite experimental songs from Paul throughout his career. I also did a guest. Cool. Yeah. I also did a guest spot on one of my competitors' podcasts with Sam Wiles, who of Paul or Nothing. So that should be out either tonight or tomorrow. And guess what we talk about? Get Enough. So some of us can't get enough of Get Enough. But we had a lot of fun. You can check out our Facebook page at Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. You can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. We're also at Twitter, or on Twitter, Two Legs Podcast. So for us, Talk More Talk. We're just finished talking about all these wonderful box sets and albums that just came out or that have been coming out since September. We need ideas of what to talk about next. If you guys have an idea, you know, shoot them our way. You can email us at talkmoresolotalk@gmail.com. You can find our Facebook page, Talk More Talk. We're also on Twitter. Kit, what's the Twitter feed for us on Twitter?
It is Talk More Talk 1, the number one.
Gotcha. Okay, and there you go. You can follow us there. You can ask us questions. You can, you know, request a show. We'd love to hear from you. So, that being said, Ken Womack, hope you get better.
Yes.
For Ken Michaels, for Kit O'Toole, I'm Tom Hunyadi saying, stop and smell the roses. Bye-bye, everyone. What?